Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This is the Armchair Cricket Podcast.
Hello all. Welcome to another episode of Armchair Cricket Podcast, a podcast focusing on test cricket by armchair critics of the game. As of the last couple of weeks, we are really focusing on IPL, and now IPL is very close to its denouement for the 2023 season. To unpack what happened over the last couple of days, the first knockout game and so on, I have a really special guest, Sandeep, who's a very avid cricket fan, and you may have heard him on some other podcasts like the Cricket Slouch and so on. Hello, Sandeep. Welcome to the Armchair Cricket Podcast.
Hello. Thank you for having me, Ajit. It's a pleasure to be on this podcast. I've been listening to some of your podcast episodes in the past, and I think your podcast is the one that I listen to if I want to catch up on the recent happenings in cricket, really, because you cover it quite comprehensively, I must say.
Thank you for the the follow as well as the Philip. It gives us a good feeling to know somebody out there actually counts on us for all their, let's say, relevant cricketing news. Also, I must actually compliment you. Today, we've had a look at each other before we started recording, but you are a much younger person from your voice than one could have imagined. I know you're a professional and you've been in your field for a while already, but by the looks of it, your voice doesn't give you away. So it remains between me and you, of course, how old or how young you are. Yeah. But I'll let our listeners guess, make a guesswork out of it. Because all I can say is you come across much younger. You are a man with much experience, it must be said. All right. So before we get going and sort of look into the IPL events this week, I have to ask you about your cricketing influences, what influenced you while you grew up, and for you to actually talk about it on a podcast and stay involved to this level, what is keeping you going?
I'm from India, just like you, and we are all brought up with cricket. I grew up in Bangalore. So, I mean, from very early days, really, from when I was year two or year three, we used to play cricket on the streets. Gully cricket, you might call it. But I mean, though it was gully cricket, it was quite very, very competitive cricket that we used to play. Nobody liked losing, basically. So, I mean, I didn't play cricket to a very high level. I mean, it was just local gully cricket and weekend cricket with neighboring streets and stuff like that that I used to play. But I think the more we were always discussing cricket. I had a group of friends and we were discussing cricket all the time. And this continued till my college days. And even when I went to professional college, We had a group of friends who were always into cricket, and we used to have heated debates about various things, like when I was younger, it used to be who is better, whether it is Gavaskar is better or Gundappa Vishwanath is better, or later it became who is better, Tendulkar or Brian Lara. So it all heated debates about various cricketers. So, I mean, and that interest has continued till today, really. I mean, I'm not as partisan as before. I appreciate cricket coming from everywhere, and I enjoy cricket no matter where, which country is playing. Good cricket is what I want to watch, basically. Yeah.
Good to hear. And, well, you live in the UK. Does it mean you back UK, or you're still an avid India fan?
No, I don't support England, unfortunately. So, I do support India, but I'm not too bothered if they lose, to be honest. It is, as long as and good cricket comes from anywhere. So I do support India, but I'm not a diehard supporter of India. Let's put it that way.
Fair enough. Then you are like most of us. We have an affinity to good cricket, and wherever it might be played, as you said, we are happy, of course.
Yeah.
Let's move on to the meat of the matter, which is IPL. So since our last podcast, so basically it was like a tie-up between three or four teams being able to make the last spot. So we knew Gujarat and Chennai had sealed the top two positions. The third position was also sealed by LSG when they beat KKR, right? So that meant in the last 2 days of qualifiers, or last 2 days of league games, there were still potentially four to five teams that could have qualified, and out of which LSG also cemented their place. So there was one place for which it was going to be Mumbai or RCB. So we know what unfolded since that Mumbai actually beat Sunrisers, first of all, right? It was a very competitive game. And then 100 from Cameron Green at number three basically sealed the deal. And Rohit Sharma's unbeaten 50. Rohit Sharma's 50. He's a big match player, no doubt. And he came good when the chips were down. So let's start right there. Did you get a chance to catch this game at all, SRH versus MI?
Yeah, I did follow a bit of it. I mean, I didn't watch much of SRH play, but I did follow the Mumbai Indians, particularly Cameron Green's century, which was absolutely brilliant. Rohit Sharma, he benefited a bit from a couple of drop catches, didn't he?
Of course.
I think Sanveer Singh was it who dropped a couple of catches. And yeah, but I mean, he got a good, reasonably fast 50 for his standards these days. So it was a good innings from him.
Right.
But I think Cameron Green and Surya Kumar Yadav, once he got going, I don't think there was going to be any other result apart from a Mumbai win. And they did win in a canter towards the end. They had about 12 balls remaining, isn't it, when they finished? The 2 overs was remaining. So I do. I mean, Hyderabad did well, but I think they lost steam towards the end, isn't it? And the last 4 overs didn't get many runs, about
exactly.
They got some 30 runs or something like that in the last 4 overs.
From when Mayank Agarwal was dismissed, I think that was a turning point as far as I was concerned, right? So last 4 overs, they seem to have gotten 32 runs. That's about it. And that's a big miss for me.
That's right.
Because, you know, in the last 4 overs, going in at, let's say, 170, you would expect teams to accelerate, get close to 220, if anything. So there, probably they left about 15 runs on the field. That I don't think would have cost them in the end, but that's a completely different mindset. Exactly 200 versus 210, 215, right? Any team would be very wary. But then, also in this game starts, well, Cameron Green showed what he's made of, right? He's coming back from an injury, but this is one of the better prepared players when it comes to the upcoming Ashes and the World Test Championship final as well, because you would think he's a certainty, a starter in both these cricketing series. But most importantly, he came back and he showed what he's made of with the bat at number three, a very, very mature innings, because he hit 8 sixes and 8 fours, right? So that's a lot of boundary hitting right there. But the most important thing, also another guy who sort of had begun to shine, which later, you know, matured into something more, and he may still have something to say before the tournament is done, Akash Madhwal. He took 4 for 37. Another fascinating story in the IPL for you?
Yes, I think, I mean, I was just looking at what Madhwal actually today. I mean, this is the beauty of IPL, isn't it? I mean, Madhwal comes from Uttarakhand. Now, Uttarakhand is one of the weakest domestic team in India, I would imagine. I mean, in the Ranji Trophy, they don't go too far. So, if there was no IPL, there wouldn't be any place for people like Madhwal to show the talent. You would just be playing a few games for Uttarakhand, and that's it. So, I think IPL has helped people from these little smaller teams in the Indian domestic circuit to show their to show how good they are. Interestingly, he was a net bowler for RCB apparently in 2019, and then Mumbai Indians took him as one of their net bowlers. So another player that RCB didn't nurture and could have used, but Mumbai, it just shows how good Mumbai scouts are. I mean, Mumbai Indians, they have very good scouts, and they get the best of talent from all over the country.
Absolutely. Look, Vishnu Vinod, Nehal Vadera, right? I mean,
Yeah.
not to mention all the players that have gone away now, who are captaining two teams in LSG and GT, right? The Pandya brothers.
Indeed, indeed.
So they have plenty to offer, and as you are rightfully saying, they're also good. They're almost showing a Chennai-like capability now because they don't have much of a bowling attack. Look, Chris Jordan is a finisher. He's a proper finisher even for England. Jason Behrendorf is probably on the other side of his best work. Right, Cameron Green is a bit air quotes green, and Akash Madhwal definitely, is not really there. And Kartikeya, Kumar Kartikeya, he's had a really off season. So Piyush Chawla, they've used well. He didn't come much good in the last two games, must be said, but he's done his service for Mumbai in this season, right? For a guy who was sitting in the commentary box last year to come and, very much like a Chennai, catch somebody towards the fag end of their career, get 2 or 3 years of good cricketing sense and cricket out of them. Right, and have them fill a niche hole. Same with Behrendorf, same with Chawla, right? And Green is a coming man as far as Australian cricket is concerned, but he was an unknown quantity in the IPL. But he's come out with a bang right there, right? They lost Bumrah, they lost Archer, you were worried. But I was reading this, the Kadus, air quotes, playing the Kadus cricket, playing that stubborn, not giving in type of cricket, and they've gotten far. And to chase 200, I thought. Still, in a do or die game, you bat first, you make 200, you back yourself to probably win the game 9 out of 10 times, right?
Absolutely.
I thought SRS were completely, completely listless. I mean, Bhuvneshwar Kumar, as always, stellar season, I thought, and stellar finish to that one. 4 overs, 1 for 26 in such a chase, right? Given that if you take his 4 overs out, look at what has happened. It's absolute carnage because everybody else is averaging more than 10, even 12 runs an over, which is terrible, right? So a bit of sameness to the attack. Kartik Tyagi, fast, directionless or easily hittable. Umran Malik, very fast, very hittable as a result. So Cameron Green showed classy shots all through the ground, but more importantly, classy shots that showed, right? This guy is really something for the future. I mean, Jason Holder started off pretty
Indeed.
much the same way, but this guy is leaning more on the batting side than the bowling side.
Yeah, I think Cameron Green, yeah, I think going forward, I don't know how much. I mean, he will bowl for now, but I think eventually probably he might turn up more like Shane Watson, more of a batter than a bowler, isn't it? That's my feeling. That's the feeling I get about Cameron Green.
Yeah, I mean, he's only 23, and I don't want to jinx this young guy yet, but I will assume he'll finish like 1.5 wickets per test by the time he retires, but more like close to 8,000-9,000 runs. He has the pedigree, right, to actually go very
Absolutely.
far with this bowling. He might bowl a bit more in limited overs games like IPL and T20s and ODIs, because even in a World Cup, he'll give you that crucial balance. I mean, as somebody put it recently, ever since the days of Keith Miller and so on, right? Australia have always been Richie Benaud, Keith Miller. They have been enchanted by their all-rounders. The balance that an all-rounder brings.
Absolutely.
I mean, any team would love it, but a fast bowling all-rounder is the most sought-after variety, right? So he's one of those. So, I mean, again, he's only 23. He's growing into his body, 25, 26. He'll mature and get that strength, I think, where he can take that call whichever way he wants to go, right? But batting, he's meant for the future. See, Mumbai didn't even need Tim David or Nehal Vadera, I was going to say. And well, they deservedly booked a place in the last four because, well, mine and your favorite team, RCB, stumbled. What happened there?
They did, yeah. Right, well, where do we start with RCB? I mean, I think RCB, but I mean, it was basically over-reliance on three people, isn't it? I mean, four people, basically.
Who is the fourth one, I'm going to ask?
Fourth one is Siraj. Muhammad Siraj is the fourth
right,
one.
Right.
Yeah. So, and the other three of me is obvious. So, I won't name them. Kohli, Duplessis, and Maxwell, of course. So, I mean, yes, when they bat well, we will get the runs. But you can't rely on them every single time to make the runs. And, I mean, there has been a bit of bad luck coming as well. I mean, Topley was injured. We lost Topley quite early on.
Right.
Hasaranga didn't play throughout. I mean, Hasaranga was injured and starting, he was playing for Sri Lanka, so we didn't have him throughout the season.
Right.
Then there was Hazelwood was injured as well. Willie was injured. So, but I mean, injury can't be an excuse because all teams have had injury issues as well. So it's not just limited to RCB. Then Harshal Patel, I don't think he's the bowler that he was a couple of years ago. He looked quite jaded to me. I mean, Harshal Patel, especially in the depth.
Very good points, right? So the first one I'll go back is on the over-reliance on top three. See, they also lost Patidar, Rajat Patidar, to a surgery and a big injury. So he was between some important times for him. So he couldn't be there. So that was, he was the find of the last season as far as I was concerned. If he was there, you would see that difference, right? Bracewell sometimes made some runs, sometimes only once or twice. I think Anuj Rawat finished the innings well, right? In this case, Bracewell and Rawat actually finished it pretty decently after Dinesh Karthik was dismissed in the last five and a half overs. They made that relevant 60 runs. But I think in the middle overs, they, after Faf du Plessis was out, Kohli was going really strong. But between Maxwell, Lumrore and Karthik, they may have lost a few balls, which could have been very crucial. And that could have given them that 210 maybe. Again, they left probably a 10-12 run margin on the field. But still, again, pretty much like what I told you about SRH, you have enough runs to defend, right? Rashid Khan, excellent. They played him out. I remember the 16th over of the innings, Kohli simply played Rashid Khan out, not to give him a wicket, but also not to, you know, not to sort of give them the upper hand at all. Everybody knew what was happening. Rashid Khan knew it. They just played him out. So that's the commanding sort of stature this guy brings to the field. Yash Dayal later, Mohammad Shami even in the last over, and Mohit Sharma went for a lot of runs. Right? That means 197 is pretty good. Kohli unbeaten 100 again, back-to-back hundreds, showing that his T20 game is not done. And more importantly, strike rate of 165. Two games where he surpassed a strike rate of 160, showing that as an opener, he's not really thinking like an anchor anymore. So, first half of the season, he faced a lot of criticism, but then he's come back strongly in the second half. Glenn Maxwell, good returns, right? 5-6 50s. Faf du Plessis, not a lot to say there that went wrong with him. I would say perfect as a batter, right at the top, 700 plus runs.
Yeah.
Right? You bumper here. Only problem, like what you said, Siraj is good, but then middle order has a big hole. Dinesh Karthik could have filled it. He couldn't do much. Bracewell, when given opportunities, I thought he was okay. Basically, I blame their sort of merry-go-round with Lumrore and Rawat. One game you start, one game you finish the innings. You don't know what you're doing, right? But then, again, in a T20 top six, there is no fixed spot. You can go anywhere. But maybe the top three are fixed. Yeah. But then you still, in the other three, you can go anywhere. Not a lot happened there, unfortunately. And of course, just to finish off the same story, but from the other side, you were talking of net bowlers. Mohit Sharma chose to be a net bowler for GT and now he's a part of 11. Right? Another guy who was nurtured and brought back in. Then something really special happened. Shubman Gill, who's potentially at the top of his form at this point in time. It augurs really well if you're an India fan because India are heading to the World Test Championship final. You would expect him to open with Rohit, both of whom look in decent form. But here he hit back wonderfully. I mean, I don't think in the end, Siraj gave two sixes in the 19th over, I saw. And there was not a lot wrong he did. Right? No. Those were fantastic shots. Just that he used the pace and his hand-eye. He got into such good positions. He was just able to simply flick it away for a six. Effortless. This was 100 batting at a strike rate of 200, and I mean, a real feast to the eyes. What did you think of this innings?
Absolutely brilliant innings from Shubman Gill. I mean, I want to draw a distinction between his innings and Kohli's innings. I mean, I know you said that Kohli scored two back-to-back hundreds and he's his best at T20, but I have a bit of a counterpoint to that, really. So Kohli got how much? He got 101 in 61 deliveries. In the score of 197. So that means the other people, the rest of the team, got 96 runs in 59 deliveries. So Kohli has played more than half the number of deliveries to get 101, and the rest got almost the same, right? And if you see Gill got 104 in 52 deliveries, and the rest got how much? 94 in 59 deliveries. So
pretty much the same if you think about it. 97 versus 94
In 64 deliveries, actually. They got the rest got, yeah. So, I mean, if you compare that, I mean, Gill has played exceedingly well in that knock. I mean, that's how it should be, isn't it? The person who goes on to score 100, he should get the vast majority of the runs for the team, I think.
Absolutely. Another point what you brought up, Vijay Shankar, wonderful innings. He was going at a little over run a ball, even at 20 ball mark.
Yeah, it was a very streaky innings from Vijay.
Lot of innings, lot of force behind the wicket. I remember.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Lot of edges. Yeah. Siraj, like, I remember Siraj shouting in like anger. Just, this guy is completely beaten. That would have been a slip catch in a test match. But in a T20, yeah, there is no slips. And I think twice or thrice he hit boundaries like that. So they bought in Himanshu Sharma, RCB. That didn't work. Harshal Patel was played out. Michael Bressel was hit out. Vijay Kumar Vaishak is still a bit raw around the edges. Wayne Parnell, I mean, he can have his good days. So for me, for RCB, Siraj was always doing the work. Even in this game, even though he gave two sixes in the last over, he more or less did his job. Meant at going at 8-0, right? Take 2 wickets. Yeah. The real problem was, well, nobody could dislodge Shubman Gill. And of course, look, they had the presence of mind to just stay calm in the last few overs, knowing Gill will hit the runs. If RCB could tie Gill down to even two or three balls for like singles, they would have probably won this game. But then that was not going to happen. Gill simply blazed away. Something that looked like a bit of a challenge when David Miller got out. Right? Yeah. You still need 26, 27 runs and hardly 12, 13 balls. He simply blazed them and they won with 5 balls to go. I mean, again, you probably have a point when you say RCB have been a bit unlucky in crucial points in this tournament. And this was another time where somebody stood up and played potentially the innings of his life, at least as far as T20 is concerned, and you're buried, right?
Yeah.
So very, very much of a bad luck. I think let's keep the review of season review of RCB to the end of this section. If we were to go quickly forward. So now we know the last four, Gujarat Titans versus Super Kings.
Yeah.
So these are 1 and 2. And then you have for the first eliminator, LSG versus Mumbai Indians. So let's go through the first two games of that. So in the first of those two games, again, any surprise? Chennai coming good in the first qualifier to beat, let's say, an in-form GT?
No, I think, CSK is, especially at the Chidambaram Stadium, CSK is almost unbeatable, I would say. So I think it was no surprise at all, considering the strengths with the bowling. CSK was expected to win, especially after they got to bat first. And I think they did exactly that.
This is the template they have. Win the toss, if you get to bowl first, then you use slower bowlers to start stifling the batsman already. If not, you get to bat first, you go blazing. Use the new ball. Get as much as possible of the first 6-7 overs, which they did. Then the pitch started duly slowing down when the ball got a little old. But by then, Rutraj Gaikwad had done the job. See, if you look at the strike rate of the top two, right? Rutraj Gaikwad, 136 when he got out. Devon Conway 40 at just a strike rate of 117. But on this pitch, even 145, 150 is defensible. Yeah. That's a wonderful effort, right? So this Devon Conway is pretty much the new Mike Hussey. That's what we all heard, right, through the season. He's holding up that role. Make a 38, 40 at a strike rate of 120. If you get any further, start hitting blindly, right? Dubey didn't work, but a couple of good cameos, three good cameos, I'd say. Even Jadeja's was a wonderful cameo. Everybody who follows scores at 170, 180, try to put pressure on the opposition, try to get you past 160. So you come to even 75 for one or 80 for one at the midway mark, from there you start hitting, right? That's precisely what Chennai did. This is a well-known template. Tala failed in the first qualifier, but be careful in the upcoming games, in any case, in the final, right?
Yeah. Jadeja, mm-hmm. the ball was brilliant, wasn't he? I mean, 4 for 18 of just 4 overs. That was absolutely brilliant spell from Jadeja. So.
Absolutely. I mean, the real difference between him and Tikshana, yeah. they completely tied down the more powerful middle order of GT, right? Between Pandya, yeah. Shanaka, Miller and Shankar. You would think they would do something special. But then Rahul Tevatiya in the end also, he simply worked out. You saw they are not going to bowl anything in his arc. He's very good through the leg. They kept bowling it well.
Yeah.
They got as close as they did, if anything, was because of Rashid Khan 30. Once Shubman Gill was dismissed, Shubman Gill was playing the innings that Conway played, right? A strike rate of 110, 115, there or thereabouts, trying to slowly push the total to a point from which you'll need maybe 10 runs of the last 6 overs or something, right? Yeah. And you try and reach that. Yeah. They kept losing wickets. That's where you have to give a lot of credit to Jadeja. You rightly picked him and Tikshana, right?
Yeah.
But then they have this finisher, right? In Pathirada. Really, really special. Yeah. He knows he'll go for 7-8 for an over, even 9 an over. He doesn't care because he'll have 12 runs per over to play. That's what his other bowlers will give him. And he pulled it back beautifully. In the end, it was not much of a contest. I mean, given that they were all out of the last ball. I mean, 15 runs is a big margin in T20s, isn't it? It is. Given the shock that they need to sort of, you know, regroup together and play the next qualifier strongly.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they are playing at home, the next one. So that, although the 7 matches they played, they won 4 at home. So it's not that they have got a huge advantage playing at home or anything like that. But I think it should help, especially if I think it's going to be a good batting pitch tomorrow. So I would expect them to, I think the one who bats first will probably going to win. Sorry, one who chases. I think it will be quite easy.
You went the other way.
Yeah.
So I was thinking of a Chennai-like template where you win the toss, you stifle the opposition if possible, or you. So you're going that way. So if the team that will win the toss will want to bowl first.
Yeah, I would imagine. So I think it's going to be a good pitch. I mean, they're expecting temperatures to be quite high tomorrow. Not much dew coming on. So I think it is. It's going to be good for batting all day. So.
Fair enough. Yeah. But then the pitch sort of tends to slow down a little, right?
It does.
The ball is a bit older.
Yeah.
So more like a 170 sort of a total. But let's see. I mean, Ahmedabad has actually fielded two different kinds of pitches when it had back-to-back tests, right? Against
England. Yeah, last year.
Yeah, so everything is possible. But I don't think it would have tired out the entire square, I would say.
Yeah.
I don't know if they have been very clever in hiding one pitch throughout and then only using 3 pitches or something. The fourth one will be unveiled tomorrow, which will be like a belter with 200 takes on 210 easily or so on.
Yeah.
So it is going to be an interesting thing. But if you go by what has gone on in the season, you would back GT, right? I mean, Mumbai have done really well. They took that leap of faith to get through and come to where they are. But then now, I very well think they may have hit the wall. Look, if you go one step back, Mumbai did a wonderful job, right? So it was the master versus his protege. So yeah. Rohit Sharma versus Pandya, the skippers, right? And Rohit Sharma put his protege firmly in place. So again, they are playing in Chennai. And I think Mumbai were comfortably 15, 20 runs above par, 182 for 8 eliminator.
Yeah, I think that this was quite an interesting match, actually. I thought it would be because I don't think LSG did much wrong when they started chasing. They were doing all right till Stoinis was doing well, but then they lost Krunal Pandya, and from then I don't know what it was. A bit of a brain fade from them, isn't it? I mean, they lost a lot of wickets.
Absolutely.
Madhwal was brilliant. I mean, the wicket of Nicholas Pooran especially was a very good delivery from him.
First ball, right?
Yeah, first ball.
I mean, he bowled Ayush Badoni. That was again a wonderful slower ball, right? And then he got Pooran.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, Huda, I don't know, he ran Stoinis out, potentially killing the game because Stoinis was playing really well.
Yeah.
Any person who could have chased this total down was Stoinis, because Huda had to like go at 110, 115, which he was.
Yeah.
Right. If you batted along, you probably came to, as I said, 44 of 40, of 3 overs or 4 overs, and you give yourself a chance at the end.
Yeah.
They couldn't get there.
Yeah.
Right. And then another run out, Krishnappa Gautam, and you had to look at the... You have to look at the faces of Andy Flower and Gautam Gambhir. I mean, I don't know what they would have done to those players now. I'm thinking people like Gautam and Huda.
Yeah, I know. I think it was a bit of brain fade. I mean, even Stoinis run out was, I mean, they collided in the middle of the pitches and did the Huda and the Stoinis. I mean, that's a bit schoolboyish. Yeah.
No, but I thought it was Stoinis who had made the error.
Yeah.
I mean, you can correct me if you, because Stoinis was running down the wrong way.
Yeah.
Right. But then it cost them that crucial momentum. And he was a six hitter out and out, right? So as long as he's at the crease, you know, even 45, 50 in the last 3-4 overs is easily chaseable. But they lost him. And then Huda lost his way as well. If Huda had taken them closer, he would have had some redemption. But I think there was no stopping Mumbai yesterday. So everything that turned up, except Hrithik Shokin's 1 over, I think, it was perfect. Chris Jordan bowled 2 overs for 7, where actually they even reviewed the last ball of the 19th over, and then it was given a wide, but then it was a maiden, 19th over maiden. And then Piyush Chawla, 1 for 28, the slower bowler is doing exactly what is needed, right?
Yeah.
Shokin really didn't go anywhere.
Yeah. But
Madhwal, wonderful length control. From the moment he started bowling, he seemed to have worked out perfectly where to bowl on that pitch.
Yeah.
Right,
five very for happy five. To That's see that. Amazing figures. I mean, yeah.
Right, and for as you said, a net bowler,
net
bowler, tennis ball bowler to come this far, become the trump card as far as Mumbai is concerned, who are really bowler short.
Yeah,
I mean, this is fantastic story.
Right?
Yeah, we don't know if we'll go any further from here, but this is a real heartwarming story if you are a cricket fan. What
Absolutely.
You said, coming from a place like Roorkee, Uttaranchal,
it
has no cricketing pedigree per se.
Exactly.
Who knows? You know, Roorkee might become the next Ranchi, as you said. Dhoni did it. This guy is very close to 30, but nonetheless, he might have a fruitful couple of years.
Yeah.
In IPL, and I mean, Mumbai are known for their loyalty as well. They are very known for rewarding and keeping their core group together.
Yeah.
So, well, we've also had a quick preview. So it'll be a Gujarat versus Chennai final again, according to you.
Yes.
Or will you see El Clasico?
No, I mean, I think it's 50-50 between Chennai and GT. I think both are equally good. I mean, there is nothing much to separate the two. I think MI, because they are so good in knockout phases, the Mumbai Indians, I mean, the
absolutely. You hit it on the head.
Yeah, right. So I think that's one thing that will go in their favor. But I think it is going to be 50-50 and... difficult to predict, but I will go with Mumbai actually. Especially if Surya Kumar Yadav plays one of his innings, I don't think GT will be able to handle it really.
Yeah, I mean, he looked good, right? I mean,
yeah.
He just failed once in the last 4 games or so, and he's doing what is required really. Cam Green is in good form. Rohit Sharma definitely. Ishan Kishan is doing whatever is required to give them like a good start in the. So I'm thinking, by the way, team winning the toss will probably win the game tomorrow. That's the way I look at it. You could be right. I back GT because it's their home and the form that Gill and the rest of them are in, because Pandya has not done much yet.
No, right? He hasn't.
And you would think he might pick a moment,
yeah.
You know, come really good and see what might happen. So let's see if that's possible.
Yeah.
But I'm going to back GT, you back Mumbai. But nonetheless, the last question is, will somebody be able to, whichever one of them gets there, will they be able to stop Chennai?
I think, look, when it comes to IPL, I think the winner of qualifier one usually goes on to win the final. It's very rare for the one who has to play 3 knock. It takes a lot out of winning these knockout matches. I mean, it drains you out completely. So winning 3 knockout matches is going to be a bit difficult. I think CSK are favorites just because of that. But having said that, Mumbai is the one team that has done won 3 matches to get to the final. I mean, we're doing the final, so they've done that before. They've done that before, so that's something that we should bear in mind as well. but it's going to be interesting.
One of the only teams to have a solid, solid record against Chennai in knockouts is Mumbai. And a Mumbai in momentum is a completely different beast.
True.
Right? This is the first real test for GT when they're building their legacy. They won it first time. At the first time of asking, they won the trophy. Now, this is the real question. Can Hardik Pandya, who's so much of a good captain, who can bring the best out of his players, will his, you know, the stalwarts, he himself is not a stalwart in this season, but Shami, Rashid, Gill, right? Maybe one of the other batters. Will they stand up? Will they destroy Mumbai? Or with the bat or with the ball? So that remains to be seen. I really think unless it's Mumbai, Chennai will run away with the trophy as well. Let's see if that happens. Okay. Now, before we completely close this section out, a couple of quick points. RCB. We both are from that part of the world. I think we should take a minute to just have a quick look at how RCB have fared this season.
Right. I mean, you made a point about Kohli. I will bring some more statistics about Kohli. So let's see how well he did or how well he didn't do. So, I mean, he got a lot of runs. Obviously, he is among the top 10 run scorers in this IPL. But I mean, there are only three among the top 10 who have got a strike rate of less than 140. One is Kohli, one is Warner, and we know how DC fared. I mean, Warner's innings were a lot of match losing innings, in my opinion. And then the third one is Conway. Now, Conway, you can argue that he played most of his matches in Chennai, where the scores were a bit lower. Kohli, however, played seven matches in Chinnaswamy Stadium, right? So, and he, in spite of that, his strike rate is below 140 overall. If you take how many centuries? There are 10 centuries that have been scored in the IPL, okay? And who scored the 8th and the 9th fastest century? It was Kohli, okay? The 10th is Prabh Simran, who scored this first century, but Kohli was the 8th and 9th. And if you take the 90-plus scores, there are 17 90-plus scores, okay? And Kohli is the 14th and the 16th fastest in that. So, I mean, I mean, people might think I'm being a bit harsh on Kohli, but these are facts, really. I mean, these, you can't argue against these facts. If you look at his 2016 season, Kohli got 900-odd runs in that season. And his strike rate then was 152 or something like that. And that was second only to de Villiers at the time. Okay. So 2016, 150 was an excellent strike rate. A lot of people used to have 130, 140 strike rate, but Kohli had 150 strike rate. And now the strike rate, 150 is nothing. 160, 170 is the sort of good strike rate now. And Kohli has gone from 150 to 138 now. So I don't think his T20 game has improved at all. I don't think it's anywhere. It's regressed a lot. He gets the big runs, I agree. But some people might argue that, well, if he doesn't score, then RCB will get nothing, which is probably true. I think probably RCB will get bowled out for next to nothing if Kohli doesn't get the runs. But then you need a proper team, really, isn't it? Not just rely on Kohli to get runs at a slow rate and expect to win matches.
You have a good point there. Look, the other thing, we already discussed the hole in the middle order. Right? And Siraj doing bulk of the heavy lifting when it comes to bowling. RCB didn't have a functioning spin.
No.
Right? And also, if you were to look a little further on, what will they do with Lumbroor and Anuj? I don't know, really. Because these guys are there or thereabouts. They try their best, but they're not delivering in terms of runs. Now, you had Kedar Jadhav, another sort of left-field pick to replace Willie.
Where did that come from?
And then I think he got a chance as a finisher because they saw Dinesh Karthik was not delivering. They went for his finishing skills and tried to plug that big hole in the middle. It went nowhere. Yeah. Right? I mean, for me, after the top three or four, KK, RCB batting completely vanishes. Nobody, only Bracewell scored a few runs. Right? That's a big problem for me. Hasaranga didn't turn up. So, if you look forward to where RCB are going from here, Look, Kohli will probably have played 2 to 3 seasons, definitely. Yeah. No worries there in IPL, right? But Faf is going to be 40 almost next year. Dinesh Karthik will be 38 plus. Kedar Jadhav will be 37. So if you actually release Mahipal, Lamrore and Anuj, where are you then going is the question, right? What is the decision you would take if you are in RCB's hot seat? Because do you stick or do you twist? You let all of these youngsters go and expect Rajat Patidar to come back and do well for you again, but then go with some other picks. What about the spinners? Right? Do they have somebody like... why did they have to let go of Yuzvendra Chahal? But that's a long story. Now that's done in the past. Do they go for somebody like a Piyush Chawla who they can buy cheaply, but somebody like that, not him. Somebody like that where they can get 2 or 3 good seasons out of him. So I'm curious what your thoughts on the next moves.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of holes to fill, really, isn't it? I mean, it's not just one or two, as you said, the bowlers as well as the spin bowlers in particular, and also the middle order. I mean, Dinesh Karthik last year, he was amazing, but this year, I mean, it's been a disappointment, really. So
he came back, right? He came back all the way to the Indian team on the basis of his form last year.
That's right, yeah. Okay, so I mean, hopefully Patidar will be in a better position next year. And there is another Karnataka player, I don't know, I can't remember his name now.
Pawan Deshpande?
No, it starts with a B, his surname, I can't remember. Dodda Ganesh has been tweeting about it quite a bit, saying why is he not being picked up, he's a good finisher or something like that. So I don't know, I can't remember the name now, but he's supposed to be quite good, and so that might be an option.
I see.
Yeah, I'll try to get the name of that person. I can't remember now.
No worry. But all right. So, do they go back to local talent, local homegrown talent in and around the Karnataka circuit? Look for somebody there, or
why not? I mean, hopefully Hasaranga and Hazelwood and all those Topley and all those people will be fit next year, so we might have some good options for bowling at least. Harshal Patel, what do you make of Harshal Patel, really? I mean, what's wrong with him?
So that's a good point.
Yeah.
No, it's nothing wrong with him, right? So people have understood how to keep him out.
Mm.
So Harshal Patel succeeds mostly when other people make mistakes trying to target him.
Yeah.
Mm. In this season, you'll see in many of the games, he's like 4 overs 30 for 1, 4 overs 28 for no wicket.
Yeah.
They're playing him out, right? And then he bowls well. He has all of these lot of variations and everything. But first 2 or 3 games, he was not good.
Yeah.
Since then, teams have understood in the crucial phases to keep him out.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Right? So that's the main point. And there comes the real problem. Who with Siraj? Siraj is bowling great test match length. Mm-hmm. He's successful bowling that at 140 plus. Between Parnell and the likes of Harshal Patel, they'll need one more solid bowler to support him.
True.
Right? And then a really good spinner. So somebody who can at least in 3 or 4 games, Zampa did it. Right? Zampa was also there previously. And Zampa used to do it. In Rajasthan, he did it.
Yeah.
Right? And so now with the super sub or impact player available, you can use it that way as well.
Mm.
You don't really need to rely on his batting and so on. So a lot of tough decisions if you are in the RCB camp.
Yeah.
Sort of leading their management. But then, look, we knew at the start of the season, the fact that they came as far as they did is already a great thing for us as RCB fans. I don't think they would have won more than 5 or 6 games. Well, they won 7 and they came closer to winning 8 and sort of qualifying automatically.
Yeah.
So, that way, I'm a bit happy. But then, as a Bangalore fan, I mean, you're a cricket tajik. You know this already, right? So, it's okay. Isala Kapnam de, maybe no Mundin Sala Kapnam de next time, right? We should actually modify that slogan and say next time the cup is ours. Then at least, you know, you have something to look forward to every year.
Does any other IPL team have a slogan like that? I mean, I think that RCB put unnecessary pressure with slogans.
No, everybody has some sort of a slogan, right? Kolkata Traders, I know. Yeah. Ava De from Gujarat Titans. And so every team actually has a slogan.
Okay.
And Isala Kapnam De is a way of RCB with that Mr. Nag sort of a guy to keep the local people also hooked in.
Yeah.
That's all that is fine.
Yeah.
But that's the certainty of what it means has been a curse, I think, for RCB. It's time they change their slogan.
Yeah.
All right. That was our IPL section. Moving on, I think let's have a quick stab at how the World Cup qualifiers is shaping up, because many teams have announced their potential squads. It's going to be played in Zimbabwe, and it's going to be a very hectic sort of a trophy, right? I mean, many games, two games some days, right? So you have five teams who are from the Super League, the bottom five of the Super League. So Ireland, Netherlands, Sri Lanka, West Indies, Zimbabwe. So Ireland will really, really rue the chance. I think they had the best chance apart from, I think, West Indies to sort of make it directly to the draw. The top three of the League Two, which is the next league, just below that is Nepal, Oman and Scotland. Nepal, wonderful, wonderful story. Real resurgence. They need to win 11 out of 12 at some point in time. And they just did that. Right? They put the likes of UAE out of contention and they came through. PNG, UAE, and they came through. Scotland, the next sort of team that will want to stake a claim to be the next test playing team, if there ever will be one, and so on. So let's see. Right? Oman, consistently good over the last 2 years, though in the last couple of months, they have dipped alarmingly. Yeah. Right? You would think, oh gods, where are they going from here? But let's see. So they'll be. Then comes UAE and Arab Emirates, who came through the qualifier. United States, fantastic, fantastic story, much like Nepal. Board in shambles, no players, no facility, but they've come a long way. Some top players, including their Monang Patel, their captain also, Saurabh Netravalkar, all of these people who have been stalwarts for many years now, they have ensured that top quality, the cream de la creme, stays there. And now with MLC coming up, maybe in 5 years, United States might very well be a real contender when it comes to even the League Two or even higher, right? So something to look forward to. So this is for me also the future of cricket. Some teams like Sri Lanka, West Indies, Zimbabwe have to show how dare you put us here, right? That's the first thing. The others, they are the new breed in cricket, and whether they play the right attitude, whether they show the right, you know, the right sort of skills there and show that they are here to stay. Like, not very long ago, Afghanistan was in the same group. Now, you won't even think of putting Afghanistan here. How far have they come?
Right? I think that's one of the important things to say, really. Afghanistan qualified directly. They don't have to go through these qualifiers.
Absolutely.
Okay. With regard to the qualifiers, I think it's going to be very, very competitive, because there are only two people who qualify from this. Two teams. Okay, so eight teams will go home. It's going to be very, very, very intense, I can say, because even one or two slip-ups here and there will cost any team a place in the World Cup. So the two groups, so the first group is West Indies, Zimbabwe, Netherlands, USA, and Nepal. So the top three go to the Super Sixes from this. So I would imagine West Indies, Zimbabwe and Netherlands probably are the three teams who are the favorites to probably go to the Super Six. In which order, it is difficult to say, because they carry the points that the team that they beat against, they carry the points to the Super Six. So they have to be careful that they don't, suppose, let's say West Indies want to win, then they have to win all their group matches, because if they lose to, suppose, say, Zimbabwe, and Zimbabwe also go with them, then West Indies don't carry the 2 points ahead.
Right, okay. Right.
So,
at least a team like Netherlands carries that advantage.
Yeah.
Netherlands has that chance to, you know, carry over the points. Yeah. So, at least that much they have in their favor, much like Nepal.
Yeah.
So, West Indies and Zimbabwe will really be smarting when you look at these. How they have put themselves, really.
I know, exactly.
Yeah, even in the qualifier, they are in a do or die situation. Same for Sri Lanka.
I know.
If you look at the other group, Ireland, Oman, Scotland, what you already said, even if they win, they'll carry the points to the Super Six.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? And then Sri Lanka will have to win 4 out of 4, let's say,
and
hope they can go through, even though they don't have any points that they can carry over. At least they have to beat Scotland, Oman and Ireland properly.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I think West Indies have taken this a bit seriously. I mean, if you see the T20 World Cup, they got knocked out in the first round and didn't even reach to the main draw, did they? So I think they've already announced their squad, and that shows that they're a bit serious about this. They're not taking it lightly at all. And I think they're a reasonably good team as well, which should have, I mean, In theory, they shouldn't have any trouble getting through the qualifiers. But I mean, you never know. They did lose in the T20 World Cup to unfancy teams there. They lost to Scotland, Scotland as well as Ireland, didn't they?
Right.
So
there's some payback.
Yeah.
Sri Lanka will remember it.
Sri Lanka
bitterly,
lost.
And of course,
Sri Lanka lost in Namibia.
To Netherlands, right?
Namibia,
not right, Netherlands. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. This is the real time where the chaff separates itself from the wheat. And
yeah.
If these people, even though they may be test-ranked teams and top league teams, they will want to put the other teams in their place.
Yeah.
They have a cricketing structure. They have the pride. Both are World Cup winners after all.
Right? Exactly. Yeah.
And there are no other World Cup winners in this entire tournament. They should feel the pinch.
Yeah.
So if you look at somebody like Netherlands, every game they get to play is a bonus.
Yeah.
But now they have to now show that they are better than the likes of, let's say, UAE and Nepal, who are sort of newcomers, even Oman, right? Scotland, Ireland, Netherlands are more or less, you know, the people who are the teams that have been competing among themselves, along with Afghanistan.
Yeah.
Now, Afghanistan is far distance itself.
Yeah.
Now comes the chance where among these three to show that no, we are good enough not only to stay here, but one of our foot is now facing forward. We are going to go in the direction of Afghanistan, not backwards.
Yeah.
Because Kenya, we know many other teams like that fell away.
Absolutely.
Where I mean, you know, you don't want to become a country like that, a cricketing country like that, like Netherlands. They'll be very wary of this. Same for United Arab Emirates, Oman. You've had a lot of gains in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
You want to solidify it. Look at Papua New Guinea. What happened?
Yeah, I know.
They really fell away, right?
Absolutely.
In the last few months, maybe last two couple of quarters, I must say, they really fell away, and then they're nowhere to be seen. Whereas you would expect them to be here. And Canada as well, right? So some lessons there. So if you look at the squads, Netherlands have announced a squad, right? They have a 15-man squad, no new names there, all mostly known names. Only new name for me is Noah Cruz.
Right.
This is the only unknown name. The rest are all sort of in and around the squad. They have played internationals for Netherlands, or they have at least played A games. And there is a guy called Michael Levitt. Another new man for me.
Right.
And it remains to be seen, right, how it goes. Netherlands, they will want to walk away at least with two wins.
Yeah.
When you look at the group that they are placed in, they'll feel confident of beating United States.
Yeah.
But maybe catch Zimbabwe or one of Nepal and West Indies. So for me, between Nepal and, I would say, Zimbabwe, potentially they may catch one of them.
Yeah.
If their guard is down.
Yeah.
Nepal really wiped the floor with Netherlands when they toured Nepal a couple of months back.
Netherlands did tour Zimbabwe quite recently, didn't they? And did they win one match or something?
Exactly,
like
but
that?
They lost.
All right, then.
Yeah, I think they won a match.
Yeah.
No, they won.
They won
one
match.
You're
yeah,
right.
That's right.
You're right.
Yeah.
So, but they'll want to do better.
Yeah.
They're still sort of, you know, so much used to playing at home in the Netherlands here. If you play a 50-over game, 200, 210 is a good defensible score.
Yeah.
The moment you go abroad, even if the pitches are sort of stodgy, 230, 240 is then becomes the score, right?
Yeah.
I remember, for example, last summer, they had four teams visiting, four one-day international series and so on.
Yeah.
Well, England, Pakistan, you really never expected Netherlands to beat them. But I remember there was one game against Pakistan when they needed a runner ball.
Yeah.
In the last 10 overs with 5 wickets in hand. And they stumbled. And they lost comfortably.
Yeah.
I remember I was on the field playing in a league game myself. And me and a Pakistani origin expat, he was the leg umpire. I was fielding at square leg. We were having a chat between overs. And he said, "No, man, you think Netherlands will win this? No way. They don't have the maturity."
Yeah.
"If Tom Cooper gets out," he said, "they're going to crash." That exactly happened. It was like as if he had foreseen it. They lost by like 15, 17 runs in the end comfortably. So, Teja Nidamadoru has had a breakthrough season,
he
must say. He scored 101 a game, right?
Yeah.
And then from there, he'll need to show with those nuggety 20s, 30s, 40s, looking to stay there, scoring those runs.
Yeah.
Right? So, I can also talk about the skipper wanting to make more runs. Skipper is like a moving, he's like a engine room of this batting lineup. Scott Edwards.
Yeah.
He can bat at 4, he can bat at 6. In a chase, he usually bats a little higher up the order to try and control the chase.
Yeah.
But then, Max O'Dowd doing well. And then, so with him, Vikramjit Singh, whom I've seen from when he was a real young kid. So, these people, right, you want them, one of them to have a breakthrough tournament.
Yeah.
I think Max Rodowd is pretty much near the top of his mark when it comes to his form and other things. Vikram Singh, well, he can be a real explosive player.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm really hoping he comes out of that.
Yeah.
He takes that next step where he's at least like he can be a Tamim Iqbal if he chooses, really,
yeah.
from the way he plays.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping he's able to make that. And then also people like Saqib Zulfiqar,
yeah.
right? And then Shariz Ahmed. Lot to look forward to. These are all homegrown talents. Clayton Floyd,
yeah.
for me, Vivian Kingma, Bas De Leda. Look, for me, what I would like to see is the homegrown talent really stepping
yeah.
up to the plate and making those runs
yeah.
and or making the taking those wickets.
Yeah.
They're always good in the field. They have a bunch of really seasoned professionals, but you see some names missing,
yeah.
right? You don't see a Tom Cooper here. You don't see Ackerman, Colin Ackerman.
Colin Ackerman, here,
right?
Klassen.
So this is, you see Wesley Barisi.
Yeah.
you Klassen, right?
Yeah, Klassen.
So you see these people, the rest of them, they can make up.
Yeah.
They can step up and say, we don't need expats. We don't need players. Also, no Rand Tendoshata. No, sorry. Rolof Vandamarwa.
Right, yeah.
You see, all of these people are missing.
Yeah.
So you can actually step up. You can make a real difference.
Yeah.
So because I know some of these players and what they do, really.
Mm.
I'm thinking, you know, there is a real good chance that these people can step up and make that difference.
Yeah.
So even Michael Lewitt is a homegrown talent by the looks of it.
Yeah.
Right? So he's South African, but he's playing in the Netherlands for a while.
Yeah.
So, yeah, let's see if they can they can make a real impact
yeah.
here.
Just an observation about Netherlands. I mean, what you said about them losing close matches. I mean, that's no different to how Sri Lanka was in the 1980s, right? They used to come very close and then lose by about 5 or 6 runs. But in 1996, okay. they won the World Cup. So that's... can see the
no, problem. But it took yeah. a couple of it took a couple of real world class players.
Yeah, there. True.
These were players in Arvinda De Silva.
I know.
In Muthaiah Muralidharan, in Sanat Jayasuriya,
yeah.
even at that point in time, Ramesh Kalvitarna.
That's right.
You had people who would walk into any 11.
Yeah.
That's Netherlands have never had that. So that is the whole point, I would say.
Yeah, true.
You would need to go to the next step, where your local homegrown talent is now matching the rest of the world.
Yeah, true.
Right? They also had, never forget, Chaminda was also a class bowler.
Yeah,
I'm sorry to disservice to not take his name. But Pramodaya Vikram Singha.
Yeah.
You had Asanka Guru Sinha.
Yeah.
You had Dharmasena.
Yeah.
Ruan Kalpage. All of these people were solid cricketers.
Yeah, absolutely.
They would walk into any county team and they did their bit. Score a 19 here. True. Take 2 wickets there. You know, that is what won them the game. With those 4 or 5 international players. This is the real X factor that Netherlands don't ever have.
No, that's true. Yet. That's true. Yeah.
Their best player is coming from outside.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, I'm just saying that there is always a progression for any team, really. So there is a chance that, I mean, I'm not saying Netherlands will win the World Cup in 10 years' time or anything like that. But
oh, well, let's hope they do.
Yeah.
There are a couple of interesting matchups I just thought I'll bring it to your notice. First of all, Peter Moore was playing for Zimbabwe.
Yeah. He's moved to
now
Ireland.
He's playing for Ireland
yeah.
and is back in Zimbabwe
yes.
to play there.
Yep.
Right. So that's going to be an interesting matchup, because then we can quickly look at Ireland. They'll be very disappointed to have to come to a qualifier, but we'll have a point to prove.
Yeah.
They'll have their literally first choice 11 what they want. Right, Paul Stirling, Josh Little, Andy Balberny,
yeah.
Mark Adair, Curtis Camphor. All of these people are around.
Harry Tector.
Dorkan Tucker.
Harry
I see a lot of good things, by the way.
Yeah, Harry Tector.
Harry Tector, exactly.
Dorkan Tucker.
Exactly. Solid player. George Dockrell has sort of moved on. He's reinvented himself, right? So these people, they'll want to do better than just win a couple
yeah.
of games. So they want to really put themselves with a chance of going forward. They are in the second group and they'll carry the points as well. So all they have to do is make sure they beat Oman and Scotland, right? They'll take those points forward. And at least if they beat United Arab Emirates, they're going to qualify.
Yeah.
Right? That's what I'm thinking.
Right.
So Sri Lanka, they may find it tough, but who knows? They may catch them unguarded.
That's true. Just like Namibia did in the T20 World Cup. Sri Lanka might.
Absolutely. As I said, we went through some of the other squads against Scotland. Richie Berrington, Matthew Cross, Alistair
yeah.
Evans. Then they have their potentially. There is a Brendan McMullen.
Yeah, Brendan McMullen. Yes.
Brendan McMullen. right? Very close to a very famous name who's these days behind the scenes in England. Of course, you have Hamza Tahir, Shafi Ansari, right? Mark Watt. Yeah, all of these standard, well-known players, they have sort of fallen off the radar a little bit. They'll want to remind the world what Scotland cricket is all about, right?
I think
at the same time, you have somebody like Oman. Yeah, sorry.
I think Zimbabwe will assist the spinners, probably Zimbabwe, because Mark Watt and Tahir should be in the mix, I would imagine, in the final 11 for
Good
Scotland.
Yeah. Yes, I think Mark Watt has a very important role.
Yeah, absolutely.
Between the likes of him, right? Also, people like Safi Ansari, football a little slower,
yeah,
but has good control.
Yeah.
Right? People like him will have a big role, I think,
yeah, true, true.
As well. And US, we already spoke about the teams like US, Netherlands. Yeah. I'd rather put them in the same category. It's okay that they have to then pick up from where they are. Oman had a couple of real breakout players. Aryan Khan scoring a lot of runs. And then Oman also has some very good players. Isan Maqsood has been given the
captaincy. Yeah, absolutely.
Sandeep Gowd can do a few things. Bilal Khan, right? And Naseem Khushi, the keeper. Lot of things to look forward to. I would pit them against US. Lot of players who can have a chance to make a name. Ali Khan, good bowler, right? Monang Patel, solid batter.
Akib Ilyas is very dashing batter, actually. Akib Ilyas. Yeah.
Okay. I don't know enough about this guy.
Yeah.
So all of these people, right? Stephen Taylor will want to say something. Gajanan Singh recently got 100 for them, right? Nisarg Patel, solid batting. You would expect them to sort of put their names out there when they play the likes of Sri Lanka, Zimbabwe, West Indies. They give them a scare, maybe. Even take one game off. Same for Nepal. Their squad has not come through, but Nepal, solid 6 months. Really, really important 6 months for them in their growth. I hope they can continue to convert it into runs and wickets that really make it.
There is some doubt about Sandeep Lamichandane playing because of his legal battles that's going on. So,
correct. Maybe he might not be able to leave Nepal.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah. So that's
okay.
That would be a big blow for them if he is not there.
he has been relatively quiet also on the field. Because maybe things going on off the field might be affecting him, impacting him. But
probably
we really hope he comes out on the other side and made the correct. You know, the correct decision when it comes to law prevail there and whatever may happen.
Yeah.
Right. So let's see if they can come through. Now I bring you to the last three teams, West Indies, Zimbabwe and Sri Lanka. Right. So first of all, among these three teams, do you think one of these two of these three will actually qualify or do you see an upset there? Only the finalists are going through. Huh?
It's difficult. I expect West Indies and Sri Lanka to go through. But I mean, at the same time, I said I can see a situation where both of them then not go through. So, because it's so competitive, it's not just, I mean, even if you slip one or two matches, you're out. That's how it is. So, they have to be on their toes throughout the tournament, and only then they will go through. So, there are no easy matches here, basically.
But they'll, as I said, want to make sure they don't slip up.
Yeah.
They don't suddenly slip into the second tier or suddenly slip into the second set of teams. People qualify, people watch. Because Sri Lanka and West Indies really have a lot of superstars still now in their 11s, right? Vanidhu Asaranga, Dasun Shanaka.
Yeah.
Right? You have the Chandimal, you have the Mendes. You have all of these stars, right? I don't know. I don't think Angelo Matthews will go. But a lot of big names there.
Yeah, Sri Lanka, I think, should win the... I mean, I think they are the favorites to win the title in the qualifiers. But West Indies...
You see, you have Kyle Mayers, Nicholas Pooran. You have a solid set of people there, still there. They need to lift their game and sort of suit it also. Right, not let their guard down. Don't think of this, you know, as a something that is could be an issue for them.
Yeah.
They need to think of it as this is the longer format. We'll play long. We'll take it deep. We'll make sure we win. There are no slip-ups.
I think it's high time Nicholas Pooran comes out with some consistent performances. I mean, he does play good knocks here and there, but there was not the consistency has been lacking. I must say. I think West Indies ODI team, it revolves around Shai Hope getting a big score, but he's not the fastest. And then I think Nicholas Pooran has to up his game, really.
Look, I would say even if they are scoring at 100 runs per 100 balls, right? Somebody like Shai Hope, I think 270 West Indies will defend more often than not.
Yeah.
With the bowling lineup they have. They have Ball, Gudakesh Moti, right? They have picked some good
Alzari
spinners,
Joseph. Alzari
right?
Joseph. And
Alzari Joseph is there, right?
Yeah. Akhil.
And they have some new people.
Akhil Hussain.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So they have some good spinners there.
Yeah.
Some experienced spinners.
Yeah.
Let me put it like that. Yeah. Right. But then no Shimran Admire in the squad.
Well, right? I mean, to be fair, he has not committed himself to West Indies, has he? I mean, so he missed not one flight. He missed two flights when going to the T20 World
Cup.
That
was weird. I don't know what was going on there.
Yeah.
Whether it was a breakdown in communication, lack of commitment, or something else, because that would be a real shame. He's a real young guy still, 23, 24. He has a good decade-long career in the ODIs if he wants. Because he has the talent, we know. Yeah, so he has to get out there and make the runs. I don't know what is going on. I hope he sorts himself out and he doesn't become... he's 26, fine. But still plenty of time left.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
You don't want to become a T20 mercenary.
No.
Just be lured out by the lucre, right? The color of the gold and so on. So, but they have a lot to look forward to. They have some dashers, Brandon King, Kyle Mayer, right at the top. Shamar Brooks. Quality, Roston Chase, right? You have some good all-rounders. Romario Shepherd, Jason Holder, up to a point, Kimo Powell and Alzari Joseph, right? You have some solidity also with the spin. You have Yannick Kariya, who didn't get to play much.
No.
But I think he's a very, very experienced head right there.
Yeah.
And they'll play a series against UAE before that.
That's right.
Just as a warm-up.
Yeah, that's right.
All right. And in this UAE squad was one guy, Devon Thomas.
Mm.
And now he's been suspended by ICC.
Yeah.
What happened there?
Well, he has been charged with several, there are four or five charges against him. Is it match fixing and is it in CPL, LPL and in the UAE T10 league? So these are just charges. So let's see what happens. He has been given 14 days to reply. So that's one thing. But the other bit is, I mean, if he was indeed involved, I mean, surely he's not the only person, is it? I mean, it must be a lot of other people involved in this as well. I mean, much bigger fish than Devon Thomas, I would say. And all of whom will never get named, unfortunately. So I think, and the third point is, I want to take a very nuanced view on this, really, because yes, Devon Thomas, if he has done indulgent corrupt activities, but you have to think why these things happen. It's easy for us to pass a judgment on Devon Thomas, but at the end of the day, a person like Devon Thomas is probably the most vulnerable to these sort of things, isn't it? I mean, he has not played much for West Indies. He's not had much of a career there. He gets picked up for this LPL, CPL, which are not very high-paying leagues anyway. He has not been part of the IPL or anything like that. He's about 33 years old now, so not much of a career left. So, there is always the temptation, isn't it? So he might have got involved. I'm not saying he is involved, but if he is, then it's no surprise that people who are on the fringe, who have not had much success in international cricket, that get involved in these things. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you would say that, but then look, an integrity of an individual has nothing to do with being on the fringe or being in the middle of it.
No, right? I'm not defending him. I'm not defending him. I'm just seeing why somebody like him would end up in this way. Yeah,
it helps that you're not getting paid a lot of bucks when you see a lot of people around you whom you may consider less talented than you, but have better results than you.
Yeah,
are actually making the money, right?
Yeah.
So that drive is very obvious.
Yeah.
And then, of course, look, in a place like UAE or in some of these leagues, there might be a lot of corruption going on.
Yeah.
Right. And we don't know. Not all of it has come to light.
No,
we should simply talk about any league lightly. But we know certain places, especially in the Middle East, are well known as dens of these sort of activities.
And yeah.
whenever Abu Dhabi T10 was played, there were always people sort of sniggering secretly. Look, this is just nothing but people trying to make money and so on. To think that somebody from those, one of those leagues has actually come out and been charged, this is a real serious thing. This is, you know, you can all snigger all you want, but then for somebody to be caught out doing that, that's a whole new thing. And it's unfortunate, right? It's come to pass. And whether it comes to fruition, whether he's actually charged and banned or not, I mean, his career has come to a real standstill at this point in time.
Right? Yeah, I think so.
He will definitely be withdrawn from the squad to tour UAE from West Indies. Right?
Yes.
And then so on. So he's in a real, real pickle here. And we really hope he comes out of it clean, because he's 33.
Yeah. Now,
he may have at best 2 or 3 good years left, and he may at least play in the leagues, T20 leagues and other places, and play local cricket, domestic cricket in West Indies. But then later on, with such a stain, you might not get a coaching or a, you know, a commentating gig either.
No.
Then your career sort of grinds to a halt. You may have to, you know, resort to selling cars or real estate or something. That would be a real pity. That's the one I'm really thinking of for him, right? That it doesn't come down to that. Look at what's happened to Chris Keynes, right? The likes of him. So I really don't want to see this guy being... you know, bracketed with the likes of that. I mean, Chris Keynes was one of the heroes of mine growing up, along with Mohammad Azharuddin.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, true.
And look at how their, you know, post-career days have gone on, or heat streak for that matter. It really pains me to see some of these people falling away after getting into you know, so to say, bed with really wrong people. And then, so no way back from there. So, okay. We wish Devon Thomas all the best, and we really hope he's able to clear his name.
Yeah, other thing about Devon Thomas is I think West Indies domestic cricket, it doesn't pay a lot, really. I mean, he won't be making a lot of money there as well. It's not like county cricket or Ranji Trophy. People get played quite a bit now. So
they get paid pretty decently these days. So, right? It's one of the most competitive, and not only competitive, one of the most well-paying cricketing jobs out there. Right?
Exactly. So, but it's not like that in West Indies. So, I mean. These are all the reasons why he could have done that. I'm not saying that that's right. It's not at all right. But these are the reasons why he might have succumbed to temptation.
It's understandable, but not right nonetheless. You know, it pains you to see, as a cricket fan, that these things are still... I mean, it's a reality. It's a reality in cricket.
Yeah.
So is the other thing we're going to discuss now. Jason Roy has decided to terminate his ECB contract because... MLC, he may have been offered a major league cricket contract in the United States with one of the teams. We don't know which one yet, right?
Yeah.
And then we also read Stopley may potentially be weighing up a similar option, given that he's right now recuperating from a surgery. And look, Jason Roy, 32, I don't think his time with England setup was done, but he was only holding an incremental contract. Same for the likes of Rhys Stopley. Rhys Stopley is probably more in the fringe rather than Jason Roy, who's closer to the center yet. Right.
Yeah.
You see one opening spot opening up, and Jason Roy would be right back in the limited over squads for England for me.
Yeah.
But you know, Rhys Stopley is younger, but he's more injury prone because of his stature and other things.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Again, we don't know which way he will go.
Mm.
At least Jason Roy has played more than 100 international games. Rhys Stopley about 45, I think.
Yeah.
But then this is also a reality, because we also heard during IPL multiple players talking openly about being approached by franchisee owners for a full-time T20 contract.
Yeah, Jofra
Archer. Somebody who's 30 to 33. Jofra Archer, for example, right? Also, some other players spoke about it. For example, Trent Bolt has already taken this route.
He has.
So, I didn't want to go too deep into it, but I'm worried people like Shimron Hetmyer might be tempted, because he's also from that region. He's very close to US, right? If he makes a career in the US, he'll never be far away from home. So, I'm worried somebody 26, 27, you'll hear Unmukh Chand now, for example, decided to up sticks, went to Australia, and then now he's with MLC, right?
Yeah.
So, there are these players from the South Asian subcontinent who are sort of on the fringes and know their chance in the main piece has come and gone. They're going away. This is okay.
Yeah.
But there are the likes of people like Jason Roy. This is a real surprise for me, right? At least Trent Bolt, you could understand. He's nearing the end of his career. Maybe he's done enough out there, right? So, Jason Roy, I thought he had one more World Cup in him. So I'm very surprised. Does it surprise you or not?
Well, partly it does. But on the other hand, I think this is what is going to happen in future regularly. It's already been happening. I mean, the West Indies players like Andrew Russell, Sunil Narayan, Evan Lewis, etc. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are guys who have been just playing franchise cricket. They don't even bother playing for West Indies, though they would be, they would walk into the team, I would imagine, all three of them, if they make themselves available. Shimron Hetmyer might as well go that way. England central contracts pay well, the county cricket plays well, so I'm a bit surprised that Jason Roy went down that way. But even England has got some other examples like Sam Billings. Sam Billings has made a career out of franchise cricket. He is not bothered with any central contracts with England or anything. So, yeah, I think this is the future.
Good one.
Yeah, this is going to be the future, really. Yeah.
Look, the other thing, right? He plays for Kolkata Knight Riders in the IPL, and they have a franchisee there in the US, LA Knight Riders.
Yeah.
So there is a rumor he may have been internally spoken to and assured of a career of another 5-6 years. And then, you know, why don't you pitch in with us? Much like Bolton. Right.
Yeah.
And then when you look at the money, right?
Yeah.
It's not going to be so much more. Let's say he has an incremental contract with the ECB, which will probably pay him the same amount of what these MLCs can pay, because the purse of each team, 1.15 million, is approximately nothing, because it has to be covering 16 to 19 players. Yeah. They can't give him 100-150K. That's I don't really see that, right? So who knows? However, there may be something he may have already been promised, because between KKR and LA Knight Riders, he may have had a real chance of, you know, setting himself up nicely. We can never take away the thought that these guys, not everybody will transition to a successful media pundit or a coach or something, right? So they have to also look up about, you know, making enough for the rest of their careers, setting themselves up.
Exactly.
Right? So it's not really a begrudging thing.
No.
But then it still feels a bit odd, that's all. That you know, they would choose to go this way rather than
especially Jason Roy would have been a definite for ODI team, isn't it, for the World Cup? So
that's what I meant. I thought he might play the coming World Cup.
Yeah, it's surprising that it's come from a well-to-do English player. Really, I can understand New Zealand players or West Indies players succumbing to these, but not England. Yeah,
unless you are in India, right? Unless you are a board like India, you cannot really hold on to most of your players. Then, how soon can the boards become flexible is the question.
Mm.
Any board, you see, England players upping sticks, you don't hear of an Australian player yet, but Sri Lankan, we have heard, Indian, we have heard. So, when is the time when the boards say, all of you are freelance players from now on? Unless you want a contract, you're a freelancer to start off, right?
Yeah.
Then you can pick and choose. We will give you medical tests. We will give you fitness goals. No matter whom you play for, if you want to play for England the day after tomorrow, you have to pass those tests.
Yeah.
If you don't, you're not going to play. Simple.
Mm.
Right? But then that takes a lot of freedom in also the thought process about holding squads, announcing squads which are fixed before a tournament begins. All of these things, right?
Yeah.
So in Roy's case, he's making some exceptions because he's going to be available for the whole of T20 Blast, which is currently starting.
Yeah.
And before the 100, for example, right? So he can't play the 100, so he's chosen MLC or 100. That's the way I look at it. But then potentially also a spot for the England squad. So let's see. I have a feeling we may have not heard the last of this.
No.
That we may hear that some people may opt out, but yet be brought back in. Trent Bolt, for example, right? It would be a real shame if he doesn't get to play. I think his test career is done, but he may yet play one more World Cup for New Zealand.
Yeah,
either this year or next year is my thought process. So let's see if that comes to fruition. Same for Jason Roy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So also somebody like, you know, Jofra Archer, if he's continuing to have those issues, he may say, you know what, let me become a franchisee player.
Yeah.
He won a World Cup for England after all.
Yeah.
2019-1, he played in the Ashes. He's done his bit.
Yeah.
But then sometimes that's all is to be had and that we have to understand.
Yeah. Right. I mean, at the end of the day, I don't blame any of them because, I mean, they've got short careers and they need to maximize their income in that time, isn't it? So, yeah, if somebody wants to pay them loads of money for playing a few weeks of cricket, why not?
All right. Those were all the cricketing news we wanted to talk in this episode. Thanks for being a wonderful guest,
no
Sandeep. Your first time, but I hope the first of many to
hopefully
come in the coming months and so on. Absolute pleasure chatting to you and I really appreciate the perspective.
Oh, thank you.
Right? When we are talking of, because, well, you have some experience understanding how people work. So I'm sure, you know, that helps. But wonderful, wonderful to have you. Would you want to plug anything about your, where people can reach out to you and so on? Would you like to plug?
Well, I mean, I do tweet about cricket on my Twitter handle is @sportsfan3791. So that's where people can catch me. So I'm quite happy. I mean, I like talking anything about cricket, basically. So you can get me on there.
Perfect. Perfect. Thank you once again. And we wish all our listeners a good day, wherever they may be listening from. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This is the Armchair Cricket Podcast.